Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey.
Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that Leela Q's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. Leela Q has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use Leela Q for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount.
Hey there, ice bath lovers. Do you want to take your cold exposure game up a notch with some contrast therapy? Well, you should, because cold plunges and contrast therapy can lower stress, up your immunity, and even help you sleep better. It works better than just cold therapy alone. Well, now you can do that with the new Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tubs by Master Spas. Whether you want to relax in a hot soak or get energized with a cold plunge, the Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tub has you covered. You can easily hop out of the hot water, get in the cold water, and go back and forth. When you do that, you get better results in less time, and that's what biohacking is all about. Go to chiligoattubs.com, use promo code DAVE500, and you can save $500 on any Chili Goat Cold Tub. I have one in my backyard. That's chiligoattubs.com, promo code DAVE500.
Hey, it's Dave Asprey with Bulletproof Radio. Today's cool fact of the day is that you want to really know what those prescription medications you're taking do, because you wouldn't guess that something like a dopamine agonist, which is common in some hallucinogens like Salvia divinorium, and also common in a lot of prescription drugs, can cause pathological gambling. It's one of those weird things where who would have guessed that either a drug, a hallucinogen that's legal in most states, or a whole class of drugs called dopamine agonists would do that kind of a bizarre behavior. So I was surprised to learn that, and it seemed like a cool fact of the day.
Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of six different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit arrcled.com.
Today's guest is someone unique who really has a personal story, something that has affected her. I find that some of the world's most powerful and motivated biohackers had something happen that really opened their eyes and made them start paying attention. Her name is Lisa Bloomquist, and she was injured by Cipro, the very common antibiotic, the one we were stockpiling when everyone was afraid of anthrax. And she runs a website called Floxy Hope, which talks about what this class of fluoride or fluorine-containing drugs can do to people. And she's made it her mission to talk about what these really common types of drugs actually do to your metabolism. This is one of those things where if you are not on this common class of drug, you know someone who is. And since this is a much more common thing than people know about, it's one of those things where we shine a light on it once. You listen to this episode, you'll learn some interesting things, we'll have an engaging conversation, but you'll be armed with knowledge to avoid something that can completely wreck you, as well as to talk with other people like, now, do you really want to do that? So this is just a chance to help other people. And this is the kind of stuff that I really enjoy, because this is not a one in a million problem. This is a much more common thing. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on the show, Dave. I really appreciate it.
Now, you didn't decide you were going to be, you call yourself a patient advocate, but basically someone who works with these people who are damaged so they know what happened and works with a medical profession to know about it. How did you begin? Like, how did you get into this? It's kind of an unusual thing.
Basically, like you said, I got sick. It's one of those things where it happened to me. So I was 32 years old. I was incredibly healthy and athletic. Like, I had just hiked the entire 500-mile Colorado Trail when wow. I got a urinary tract infection, just like a really simple urinary tract infection. And I took Cipro. I actually took the generic ciprofloxacin to treat that urinary tract infection. And it was like a bomb went off in my body. I went from doing CrossFit to barely being able to walk. Like, my hands and feet swelled up, and I had peripheral neuropathy that was incredibly painful. I had trouble walking a block, and to go from being incredibly athletic to not being able to walk was just horrible. And of wow. course, that caused me a huge amount of anxiety. It's hard to know when you have a bomb going off in your body how much anxiety is a result of the things that are going on and how much of it is a symptom itself. But I had a massive amount of anxiety. I had hives all over my body, but especially in my joints. I had like really profound weakness in my legs. I lost my memory. I lost my memory and my reading comprehension. And to be honest with you, like, that was much, much, much more scary. It was much more frightening than losing my physical abilities. And I've read your story. I know that you know what it's like to just suddenly not be able to think. And when you yeah. when you think of yourself as an intelligent person and you depend on your intelligence to survive and make money, to suddenly be unable to think it's horrifying.
Losing your mind is a lot worse than losing some physical capabilities or being uncomfortable. And it's tough because you and I felt it because it was kind of dramatic. And a lot of people have lost substantial portions of their capability, but because it happened more slowly, like, you don't feel it go until one day you're like, oh, I have senile cognitive dementia and I didn't even know it. I have Alzheimer's disease and I'm not aware of it. Like, it's invisible. And there's a whole line of slow decline. We just got it all at once and are like, okay, not all right. Right. So you basically took an antibiotic and your life went all to hell, but you didn't know it was the antibiotic, obviously.
You know, it was difficult to put the pieces together. I think that I had a delayed reaction. The reaction was delayed by about 2 weeks. And that made it very difficult to connect point A to point B. I think that what really triggered what triggered the bomb was the ciprofloxacin that I took. I think that was the bomb. But another thing that set it off was I took ibuprofen. And it turns out that ibuprofen, that NSAIDs, NSAIDs, potentiate the effects of quinolones, and that's the class of drugs that ciprofloxacin is. They potentiate them by up to 33,000%. And the study that was in, where it was potentiated by 33,000%, they were talking about the effects of these drugs on your GABA neurotransmitters. And you probably know, and probably a lot of your listeners know, that your GABA neurotransmitters are responsible for kind of your calming neurotransmitters. So when you relax, when you go to sleep, when you can concentrate, that's your GABA. That your GABA is involved in that, and it completely blocks your GABA neurotransmitters. So, and the combination of the NSAIDs and the Cipro completely messed up my GABA neurotransmitters, and everything went wrong. And there are some other things that the quinolones did to me as well. But I think that a lot of the mental and the central nervous system side effects have a lot to do with those GABA receptors.
It's interesting you mentioned ibuprofen because during the cool fact of the day, I talked about bizarre side effects. A lot of people don't know this, but ibuprofen and some antibiotics and modafinil, which is a phenomenal smart drug, they can all trigger something called SJS, which is a potentially, in some cases, deadly type of skin rash. But it's, you know, about 5 out of 1 million people is the potential risk. Like, the risk of that's very low, but ibuprofen's a trigger by itself. Modafinil can be a trigger by itself, and a bunch of different antibiotics are. And so it's one of those things where, okay, if that happens, you're going to end up in the hospital because you get like an autoimmune response to your skin and like it's bad. What you had was maybe more systemic from CPRO, but how often do people respond to all of the what do you call them, the quinolones?
The quinolones. So yeah. So they include Cipro in the generic of Cipro, which is ciprofloxacin, levaquin, levofloxacin, Avalox, moxifloxacin, floxin, ofloxacin. And they all have, all of those generic names have the word flox in them. And that's why a lot of people who, the people who have this multi-symptom chronic illness that's due to these drugs, we call ourselves floxies. It's just kind of short term. It's much easier than said to say than I was hurt by a drug in the quinolone class. You have antibiotics.
Got it.
You know.
So how, like, how big of an issue is this?
You know, it's really hard to tell. There was an FDA report. When the FDA added permanent peripheral neuropathy to the warning label for all of the fluoroquinolones back in 2013, they put out a report that noted that 26 million prescriptions for fluoroquinolones are given out in America each year. So that is a massive number of people. The estimates for the side effects are anywhere in between 1 and 20%. And when you get a range of 1 and 20%, you just know they don't know. They really don't know.
Yeah.
And a couple of things that are really complicating the matter are that the effects are often delayed, like they were for me. The ibuprofen really set off the bomb in my body. And it was difficult to connect the effects that I went through and the cause. And also, like, it's very bizarre. Like, who would really think that something as common and what people think of who would think that an antibiotic could cause a multi-symptom chronic illness? Like, it's not something that would occur to most people. I know that certainly before I got sick, if someone had said, you risk having permanent peripheral neuropathy, or you risk having severe anxiety and insomnia for the rest of your life, or you're going to lose your memory for some period of time because you took an antibiotic, I'd be like, no, like, what are you talking about? Like, that's completely absurd. And I think that just connecting those dots is very difficult for both patients and doctors alike. And, you know, really trying to get out the word to people that if you start having symptoms of, a lot of the symptoms are very similar to fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome. If all of a sudden you get sick with chronic fatigue syndrome like symptoms, and not that fluoroquinolones are the only causes of those diseases by any means.
No, you get Lyme disease, and you get toxic mold, and you get a few other environmental things, and most of those are triggered by some of that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like all of this toxic soup that we live in, it all contributes to mitochondrial damage. It all contributes to microbiome destruction. It all contributes to vagal nerve damage and neurotransmitter damage. And so I just want people to connect the dots when they do take a fluoroquinolone, that these drugs can have those effects. And it can feel, I thought I had an autoimmune disease. Yeah. You know, it seemed like all of a sudden I had an autoimmune disease. And, you know, all of the tests for those other things that you mentioned came up perfectly clear. The test for autoimmune diseases said that I was fine. The doctor said, you're fine. Wow. And I'm like, I'm not fine. I can't walk anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I can't think anymore. I'm obviously not fine. And, you know, that led me to try and hack. Like, what in the world had happened? Like, what happened in my body to make this bomb go off?
There are whole communities of people out there who've been affected by drugs. And it's weird because historically you were just screwed. There was just no way to get in touch with the other 5 or 10 or even 50,000 people who were affected by something. But now you have like a group working on post-finasteride syndrome. This is propecia, the stuff that you take for baldness. For a certain number of men, it basically chemically castrates you. Like you basically get like like loss of all male sexual hormones. And it's like, it's really, really disturbing for the guys who have it. So they're, you know, they're talking about this and looking at ways to treat it and cure it and taking action and talking about we need better warning labels. And so I feel like the internet and social media and cloud computing and all has enabled people like you to go out there and say, this is an issue. The big question though is, all right, we don't know how common this is. The side effects from Cipro are from 1 to 20%, but that can include, you know, upset stomach as a side effect. So you don't really, you don't know how many people get this.
Right.
We also don't know, and this is where I get really concerned about drugs. If you do a search for the quinolones and mitochondria, and mitochondria are these power plants in our cells, right? And you know what they are, but for people listening, they may not. And if you take a drug that does damage to them, that can have permanent or semi-permanent effects. And you can grow new mitochondria. By the way, did I mention Unfair Advantage, which is a part of my program for keeping my mitochondria strong after massive toxic mold exposure? But what you can do is you can look at what drugs do and you can Google them and you'll find that Cipro damages mitochondria. We don't know to what extent, but I believe that when you take a drug like that, which may save your life, okay, there's uses of these drugs. In fact, the odds of you getting your condition from taking Cipro are pretty small. But the odds of it causing some damage to your mitochondria are pretty big. Another guy who really brought this to my attention is a guy named Alex Lightman, a friend of mine who lives down in Santa Monica. He's a really influential influential guy like on Quora and does a lot of like futurist kind of things. But he's working on really like growing his physical performance, and he's around 50. So it's like, how do I get better mitochondria? And he started taking metformin, a very common anti-aging drug, as well as a diabetes drug, one that I took for several years, actually, because it has such profound effects on mimicking caloric restriction. So there's an anti-aging story for it. The problem is that he noticed his physical performance, like his the amount of time it took him to run a mile, it dropped when he was on metformin, and it stayed down for a while. And then he found the studies that said, oh yeah, metformin kind of does cause mitochondrial damage. So what we're seeing here is a soup of toxic chemicals. These are stuff we put in our environment. A soup of naturally occurring toxic chemicals, things like OTA, the most common coffee toxin, the one that I keep going on and on about in coffee, it flattens the inner mitochondrial membrane. You're seeing the quinolones. You're seeing even some common diabetes drugs, and all of these are taking hits on your mitochondria. So if you think of a car with an engine that's going to run, if all of a sudden you're like, oh, well, I didn't change the oil, I didn't change the air filter, you know, I didn't take care of the engine, I put in cheap gas, and all the other things you can do to make a car just sort of just slow down, and suddenly it doesn't go 100 or 200,000 miles, and it goes 70,000 miles, then it needs a major overhaul. I think we're all doing this. And I think that you're kind of a canary here, because it's like you got this all at once, because it really, really jacked up your mitochondria.
Exactly. Like it completely obliterated me, but it was the second time I'd taken it. The first time I was fine. I was completely fine the first time I took it. The first time I took it was in 2009. I hiked the entire Colorado Trail in 2010. And then in 2011 is when I took it the second time. So I think that our mitochondria have a damage threshold, pretty much. Like they can take a hit. Our mitochondria are built to take a hit. And you can abuse them with toxins in your environment until you can't anymore. And when and when you can't anymore, then multi-symptom chronic illness breaks loose and autoimmune diseases break loose. And you know, everything goes wrong in your body when you pass that threshold. And
you know where you're going to feel it first? You're going to feel it in your head.
Yep.
Because that's where you have the most mitochondria, your prefrontal cortex.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, when you're feeling suddenly foggy, don't just think of it as a senior moment when you're 37 years old. You know, you're not just having a senior moment. You might want to think about the toxins in your environment, including the antibiotics that you took.
Well, let's see, what are antibiotics? They're mold toxins. They're mycotoxins. The vast majority of antibiotics are simply, you take a fungus, you grow it, and you take out it, the poisonous stuff that it makes, and you concentrate it into a pill. And so, yeah, a lot of them are. But this is not a fungal derived one.
No, this is not a fungal derived one. Yeah. But this one is even scarier. So these so quinolones are actually what's called topoisomerase interrupters. And so topoisomerases are enzymes that are required for DNA and RNA replication. And basically, if the DNA and RNA replication cycle gets jammed up if you don't have these enzymes. And quinolones are topoisomerase interrupters. And so they block that process for bacteria. Our mitochondria are ancient bacteria, or at least that's the predominant theory.
They're derived from them, right?
Derived from mitochondria. And so our mitochondrial DNA cannot replicate after taking these drugs. And all of the other topoisomerase interrupters that are out there, there are several other drugs that are topoisomerase interrupters. They're all chemo drugs. And I think that a paradigm shift needs to happen when it comes to how people think of fluoroquinolones, and especially how doctors think of fluoroquinolones, because these are chemo drugs. And they need to be thought of as chemo drugs. And they've been shown to have effects on cancerous cells, which is great. That's wonderful for people who have cancer, except maybe it's not appropriate to give to people when they have a sinus infection.
So if someone went to the doctor tomorrow and the doctor said, oh, you have a infection, have some Cipro, what would you recommend the person say back to their doctor?
So first and foremost, before you accept any sort of antibiotics, you need to get a culture. Like, it's absolutely imperative that you not take antibiotics just because you're feeling bad. You need to get a culture. You need to make sure that it's a bacterial infection. It needs to be responsive to the fluoroquinolones. And then
that's so retro, though. I mean, like, when I was a kid, I had strep throat every single month. I mean, like, every month reliably, because I lived in a moldy basement, and that's one of the things you get, strep throat and sinus infections. So I was on antibiotics for 15 years, just about every month. And when I was young, they would culture it, and there was like a 15-minute culture to tell it was actually strep, and they give you antibiotics. I've gone to 10 different doctors. This is probably more than 5 years ago. I really don't have issues with that kind of infection anymore. But I'd be like, can you culture this? I don't want to take antibiotics anymore. And the answer is, we don't do that anymore. We can't culture it. Like, we don't even have the capability set anymore. Are you actually finding people who can culture what they have?
You know, personally, not in my experience. Like, my experience has been just like you. Except, I mean, like, this is absolutely absurd. Like, it's completely absurd. Like, and everyone knows about the problems of antibiotic resistance. Everyone knows about the problems of overuse of antibiotics, and that we have these antibiotic resistant bacteria that are causing death, you know, and everyone knows about that problem, except they're not stopping the overuse of the antibiotics.
We got to stop for a second, because I thought of something that I just need to say.
Sure.
So the entrepreneur in me right now is like, all right, I should go out and I should start the home lab testing company right now. I helped to start one of the first or maybe the second home lab testing company where you could actually, like, mail your blood without a doctor's prescription to get tested. But there's a very big low-hanging fruit for someone listening to this, and there are like tens of thousands of health entrepreneurs listening right now. Start a company that lets me take a swab of something that's bacterial, I think, like mucus or wherever I want to put the thing, and send it in. We don't need the DNA sequencing that you get from Ubiome, which takes a long time. Like, if you let me FedEx you something, and then tomorrow you send me an email that says it's X species, that would be incredible, because we know what species respond to what antibiotics. And if you could test antibiotic sensitivity, this doesn't require a prescription for you to know what's growing in your body. This is like a totally untapped, no one's ever done this, home lab testing thing that would let people like you and me, and probably a million other people, actually intelligently use drugs whether or not we had a culture from our doctor. That's awesome. Somebody start it, please.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think that's a brilliant idea. But, you know, like I said, everyone knows about the problem of antibiotic resistance, but people don't really realize that antibiotics have serious and severe side effects. Yeah. And I think that's basically what the word that I'm trying to get out is, that these drugs can have such serious and severe side effects that they can be, you know, kind of the life-ruining magnitude. And also, by the way, these are chemo drugs. Don't take a chemo drug when you have a sinus infection or a urinary tract infection or just like a simple infection that could be taken care of by a safer antibiotic. And there are safer antibiotics that are available in most cases. Certainly kind of back to your original point or your first question about how many people are affected by this. Like I know that not everyone who takes Cipro is obliterated like I was.
I've taken it several times.
Yeah. You know, but you also had a health journey, you know, like maybe part of that, you never know, like with these. Like,
well, I was already on my way back. Like it was one of those, oh, I'm in Thailand and well, if I don't take this, no one's going to like what happens. But I was fine.
Yeah. Like, and honestly, like I'm glad you were fine, but like giving it to people prophylactically for traveler's diarrhea, like that's something that just, oh,
it makes
my blood boil. It absolutely makes my blood boil that Pepto-Bismol and Gatorade can take care of most incidences of traveler's diarrhea. And just to prescribe a drug that is so powerful and so dangerous as ciprofloxacin, when it's not a confirmed infection, I don't think is appropriate.
What's interesting, when I went to Tibet and I learned about putting butter in tea, that was kind of the origin behind what eventually became Bulletproof Coffee. I spent 3 months there. I took grapefruit seed extract, which is a potent antimicrobial from grapefruit, and I took soil-based organisms. This is going back like to 2004 before SBOs were cool. And I took, you know, a handful of vitamins every day, and I ate like Tibetan street food and like snake venom things in Taipei. And every single person I traveled with and on buses and all this, like they all got traveler's diarrhea. I never got it once. Not on that trip. That wasn't where I had the Cipro with me because I needed it. I never took it. And to be able to go 3 months in all these different countries without ever having an issue, using healthy bacteria instead of killing everything in the gut, disturbing my microbiome, was pretty amazing, actually. And I think that most people, if they understood taking probiotics when you travel is probably a better strategy than taking antibiotics in case you need them, that we could reduce incidence of traveler's diarrhea by like 90% just by doing that.
Absolutely. And like we need to really rethink our strategy of just scorched earth policy when it comes to our microbiome and when it comes to bacteria. And you've talked about it several times on the show of just nourish your microbiome. And by the way, there are some really serious consequences if you destroy your microbiome.
I guess we call that scorched gut, right?
Yeah. Our scorched gut policy that you know, no one is denying that antibiotics have saved millions of lives. No one's denying that, but we need to acknowledge that they have consequences too. And some of the consequences of some antibiotics, especially those in the fluoroquinolone class, are life ruining. You know, like we have people who are in chronic pain because of this. They leach the magnesium and the iron out of your cells. And magnesium and iron are both vital for all sorts of enzymatic reactions and a lot of the musculoskeletal problems. So these drugs have a black box warning for tendon ruptures. They also damage collagen. They also damage muscles, all sorts of just musculoskeletal problems. People who are athletes should never, ever take these drugs.
This is really true. Cipro and tendon ruptures is something I've seen with pro athletes and with like CrossFitters and people who are really going for it. It, like, if you have to take Cipro and you're an athlete, I would say like stop being an athlete for a couple months. Like go really easy because of this risk. You blow out your tendons, man. It's not good.
Right. And it's not, it's a structural injury to the tendons.
Yeah.
So it changes the structure of the tendons, which means that it's not as easy to recover from as like a sports injury. I know a 28-year-old mixed martial artist who is essentially bedbound now because he took Cipro. And I mean, he was the type of guy who did research on whether or not he should put a banana into his smoothies before that he had. It was just, you know, that type of...
The answer to that, though, is no, because it's full of sugar, and it doesn't taste that good in the smoothie. If you're going to take the sugar hit, just eat the banana because it tastes better. But that's just...
Well, there you go. There's your answer on the smoothies.
I could have told you.
But, you know, like, that's just to kind of make the point that he was that type of person who really cared about his body. And, you know, he just trusted his doctor. And he's been obliterated. And it's really sad, you know, like I went from, like I said, doing CrossFit and doing, you know, huge hikes to, doing absolutely nothing for a while. And then as I've recovered, I'm able to do things like Pilates and I'm still able to go on like some shorter hikes and things like that. And it's not tragic for me to have to do Pilates and swimming instead of CrossFit and huge hikes. But for someone who is an athlete, that can be devastating.
Well, there's a lot of stuff that we're just learning about collagen formation in people and what makes collagen form and just even different genetic types of collagen. Like some people are way more flexible than other people. And it turns out people with that kind of collagen are also much more likely to be injured with hypermobility injuries. And they're also more likely, dramatically more likely to be in the 25% of people who get like seriously screwed up by toxic mold. So that there's an immune connection between the way your collagen is formed and the way your immune system works, and it's driven by the HLA genes. Is there a genetic component with this kind of toxicity with floxies, basically? Have they discovered that?
Almost certainly, but it hasn't been discovered. Yeah, I mean, like there's got to be a reason that I was not okay after I took it, but you were. There has to be some sort of genetic component, but I don't know what that genetic component is. But I would think that it would have something to do with collagen synthesis. And there was a recent study out of the Mayo Clinic showing that iron was chelated from cells by the quinolones. And what they showed is that it triggered an epigenetic response.
Yes.
And they hypothesized that the epigenetic, it triggered some sort of epigenetic thing that messed up collagen synthesis. They said it much more scientifically than I just did. But your enzymes need magnesium and iron. And if magnesium and iron are sucked out of your cells, you can't have those enzymatic reactions, and that's going to affect your epigenetics.
That makes great sense. Magnesium is on the top 10 list of supplements on the Bulletproof website because almost everyone's deficient anyway. If you take a drug that takes more of it out of you, yikes.
Yeah.
But there's something else in the fluoroquinolone. That word is never going to roll off my tongue nicely. I've probably said it for 10 years.
That's why we call ourselves Floxies. It's so much easier.
But it's the fluoro is the interesting part. That's fluorine. And my grandfather was one of the most preeminent fluorine chemists on the planet. He was working with fluorine as a way to isolate uranium on the Manhattan Project. In fact, he was one of the inventors of the Purex process we still use today to purify plutonium. And it was all based on this stuff. So he spent his whole career working with this nasty chemical. And he's like, it's the worst chemical ever because it reacts with everything. Like it breaks everything it comes in contact with. It's an extremely strong oxidant. And he was like, fluoride? Like, I don't want to put fluoride on my teeth. I know what it does chemically. And we had this whole thing where the aluminum industry took fluoride, which is a waste product, and was like, let's mix it with water, because when it bonds to the surface of the tooth, it has short-term benefits, even though it causes long-term damage, like to your thyroid and things like that. It's that same incredible hyper-reactivity of the fluorine molecule that can be contributing to some of what this drug does. Like, that's what makes it a powerful drug. And so there's broader concern about all drugs that contain fluorine as potentially being toxic to the thyroid and things like that. But I don't really know. Does this drug... Does Cipro have thyroid effects because of the fluoride in it or fluorine in it?
It absolutely has thyroid effects. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Like that would explain why.
Yeah. And, you know, yes, exactly. Like the fluoride certainly is a potential reason why. And, You know, there's a one of my kind of fellow floxies is someone who has studied the effects of fluoroquinolones on her thyroid extensively. And there's a great website. I believe it's fluoroquinolonethyroid.com that she has that, you know, it's the research that she's done is amazing. And the damage that it has done to her is also quite horrible. Like she had both hyper and hypothyroid at essentially the same time.
Oh, and that's gotta hurt.
Can you imagine the symptoms that she was going through? Like it was yeah. Absolutely, it's been absolutely horrible. It's been life ruining for her. And she has essentially lost everything because of the attack on her thyroid. And, you know, I don't know that she entirely connects it to the fluoride, or to the fluorine rather. But certainly the fluoroquinolones attack the thyroid, and that's a possible mechanism for all of the damage that it causes. You know, like I said, I've been just trying to hack this and trying to figure out like what in the world happened. And there are so many levels of damage that these drugs do that I'm not sure exactly what happened, but the thyroid, it attacking the thyroid is one of the possibilities.
Well, it's time to be a little bit crass, because you and your community of floxies are amazing opportunities and guinea pigs, just like all the people who've been exposed to toxic mold or mercury or have autoimmune diseases. Like all of the people who had something go wrong, I look at them as canaries. And every time it's a learning opportunity. So it's not really that crass, but it's like glass half empty, glass half full. So you are more highly motivated than almost anyone else on the planet to fix mitochondrial damage and to fix damages in collagen synthesis, to fix autoimmune problems, which you may or may not have, and to fix thyroid conditions, right?
In the gut. Don't forget about and your the gut. Gut.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it's an antibiotic.
So here you are. You're looking at five distinct and probably closer to 20 distinct different things if we got really into it. And you have a community of people who are like, this is life and death. Yeah. Now, I would argue that the vast majority of innovation is going to come from you guys, not from researchers specific to these conditions, because the researchers aren't going to die.
Right.
If it doesn't happen. And the researchers will not be able to take risks because they won't do it ethically, and they won't even be legally allowed to do what you will do to keep from dying. Do you agree with that?
I do. And that has both its pros and cons,
it
right?
Does.
Like it has its pros in that like people are willing to experiment on themselves. It has its cons that people are willing to experiment on themselves.
Yep.
And you know, you can hurt yourself. And
people do it all the time.
And people, I'm sure you've had some of your self-experimentation go a little awry. You know?
See, that little scar is from an electrode burn. And I have a few other times when I probably wasn't very happy with what I did. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really frustrating in a lot of ways to not have some guidance, you know? Like, we go to the doctor and they just say, like, I don't know what's wrong with you. Have some antidepressants. And it's like, what? Nah. That's not helpful. that's the opposite of helpful.
I've gone to a few doctors and I'm like, look, I'm going to do this experiment. I want to see what this pharmaceutical does for my condition. And I've done scads of research. Here's 20 studies that say that it works. In fact, one of the first ones was modafinil. When it was first on the market, I'm like, okay, I want to try this for these specific brain reasons because I have this going on and here's 3 studies. And they're like, well, that's an off-label use. I can't support that because my license is at risk. So when people like you and me and really probably half of the Western world is like, I'm dealing with insert name of nagging, life-altering symptom, whether it's I'm always in pain or I'm tired all the time or I get headaches. People have these things and they're trying to solve them. And if you go to the doctor and you're like, I want lifestyle help, I want to try this, I want to try supplements, maybe you get help, maybe you don't. And you're like, okay, now I want to add a pharmaceutical thing on there, or I want access to hyperbaric oxygen with high pressure, which is, by the way, probably something that would help you.
Right.
Well, you need a permission slip, and the guys who write the permission slips can lose their license if they help you. And so that's why you have a lot of this kind of like, well, I'm going to go off, I'm going to do it. And you go to a site, actually there's a bunch of websites out there where people are like, I mix up my own drugs. I'm concentrating cough syrup, and they're doing like bizarre stuff, which is really not advisable. But it's sometimes it's out of desperation, and it's not they wouldn't accept help. It's that when they asked for help, they couldn't get it.
Right.
And what's your experience been?
Oh, I think that experience is incredibly common. Like my personal experience is that the doctor said, "You're fine." I'm like, no. I'm not fine. Like because the tests say that I'm fine, your tests are obviously wrong, like or inadequate in some way, shape, or form. And we absolutely need more tests for mitochondrial functioning. We need more. We need better tests for our gut function.
I'm laughing right now. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you by laughing.
No worries.
The reason I made Moldy, the documentary, and mold is always a mitochondrial damaging thing. It does lots of other stuff too, like thyroid and other hormones. But I had the same exact experience where like you don't look like there's anything wrong with you. You have some dark circles under your eyes, whatever. But like you don't look like there's anything wrong, therefore you're crazy. But I wanted to get like a dozen people who had exactly this talk about it, and they did. And you sound just like that, even though it's a different thing. We're like, if you feel like something's wrong with you, that's evidence.
Right.
It is the most important evidence of all. And the fact someone goes, there's no evidence you feel bad. You're like, dude, I can feel the feeling. That is evidence.
Right. Right? Like, do you want me to try running a mile? Because I can't anymore. And I used to be able to do that with ease. So something's wrong.
So now that we've established you're a guinea pig and you're a highly motivated guinea pig who's going to take more risks than medical researchers are allowed to do, what are you doing to fix your mitochondria?
You know, I took a zillion supplements.
Did any of them work?
Iron worked very well. Iron is what gave me my energy back. And, you know, like all I need to just like put the little caveat that iron is not for everyone, you know.
Oh, it's pretty dangerous for some people.
Men, of course, should be very careful and should get their levels checked. Like as a menstruating woman, I figured I was okay with a very low dose iron supplement.
Smart.
And I was. I got my levels checked afterward and I was fine. Magnesium helped immensely. Magnesium helps a lot of people. Chlorophyll, I think, helped quite a bit from nettles.
That's a copper-containing substance as well. So was it the copper or the chlorophyll directly? I don't know.
Okay. Like that's a really good question.
Because you're getting into a copper zinc balance when you do that. And there's people with copper toxicity, and there's people with copper lack of it.
Well, and that actually brings up an interesting point that maybe people should be a little bit careful, because it's quite. The symptoms of fluoroquinolone toxicity are very similar to the symptoms of porphyria and pyloria, and that's a lot of that's copper toxicity, and people need more zinc. So, you know, don't necessarily follow my lead on that one. I took a lot of mitochondrial support supplements. I took lots of CoQ10, vitamin E, PQQ. Things along those lines. And MitoQ has helped a lot of people. I did not personally take it because I was feeling better by the time I heard about it, and it's awfully expensive.
We carry the MitoQ. In fact, I have MitoQ on my face right now. We carry that on the Bulletproof store. Topically, I found it to be really effective. Orally, I haven't
That's great.
I took 20 of them orally. Uh-huh. And was like, I don't feel anything. All right, maybe my mitochondria don't need that.
But topically, like, I feel like I aged quite a bit. Like I've got some wrinkles that I just go like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if it's normal aging over the last 5 years or if it's like
collagen thing, right?
Yeah.
Your skin is collagen. So I mean, you can certainly eat collagen. Like, that's why I eat collagen, because I don't know that I've had damage to my collagen synthesis, but I did notice, like, it does take something out of you to have an autoimmune condition or to be exposed to toxins.
Yeah. And
are you doing ice, like cold exposure?
I'm not.
You can trigger, a lot of people don't know this, you can trigger collagen resynthesis with ice. So I do cryotherapy. I have, and here at Bulletproof Labs, I have like the liquid nitrogen chamber. And that's the extreme form, but it really rapidly changes your collagen. But even just doing the 30-minute cold shower, which you'd have to work up to if you have adrenal damage, or doing a mild, like 60-degree water, sitting in that for a little while, like when you swim in colder water, that can take some of the collagen and make it healthier again.
That's interesting. Swimming really helped me a lot. Cool. And I felt like there was something, you know, sorry to be too woo-woo, but there's something kind of energetically about water that just, it felt very healing. And it was an exercise that I could do when I couldn't move as well anymore.
There's a neurological component to swimming that isn't well recognized. I think it may have to do with what we experience in the womb. But one of the mold victims, who was a science writer actually for big magazines, who was exposed to toxic mold and was in Moldy the movie, we have video of this in the movie. It's incredible. She was on a walker and could barely walk, and she would take her walker up to the edge of the pool, sort of like fall into the pool, swim to the other side of the pool, get up and walk away. As soon as she swam, it turned her nervous system back on enough that she could overcome the toxic effect of the mold. It's the most bizarre thing ever, but it was totally documented.
That's really fascinating.
Yeah.
Doing swimming really helped me. Just trying to keep on moving really helped me. It was really hard, and I think there are a lot of people who are bedbound because of fluoroquinolone toxicity are like, well, that's nice, Lisa, you know. But you gotta, as much as you can, you know. It helps the mitochondria to keep on moving.
So what else helped your mitochondria? So swimming, some supplements, and magnesium and iron and chlorophyll. Were there other mitochondrial hacks that worked for you? Because I'm guessing everyone has mitochondrial dysfunction, and some of these are going to help other people where you're the shining star guinea pig for them.
Right. Like a lot of different things helped me, and I'm not sure whether or not they were healing to my mitochondria. Acupuncture. I really credit my acupuncturist with saving my life.
Hold on. Don't you know that stuff doesn't work? It's been proven.
You know, like,
sorry.
Like I went to the doctor and they said, you're fine. I went to my acupuncturist and he treated me. And
it worked,
and,
right?
And it worked. And you
there's
know,
no evidence that it worked.
And honestly, like, you felt better. Honestly, if it's the placebo effect, I don't care.
It's not.
Like,
acupuncture is so proven to work now. Right. Like, you just get this like old school, like meh attitude. And you've probably faced it about lots of things that work for you. So I'm just kind of making fun of the people who make fun of acupuncture at this point.
Right. And like the effects on the vagal nerve, like I saw that you, both of us wrote a post about the vagus nerve, and there are all sorts of exciting discoveries about the vagus nerve, and all the acupuncturists are like, yup, we've been telling you that. Like, you work on the nervous system. This is what you work on. This is how to become healthy. So acupuncture helped me immensely. Avoiding drugs helped me immensely. Staying away from NSAIDs. I used to pop ibuprofen like it was candy.
It's really not candy for anyone. That stuff is rough on the body.
It's really rough on the body, and I think that people don't realize how damaging it is. How damaging to the liver it is, how damaging to neurotransmitters it is, how damaging to the gut it is. I improved greatly not taking ibuprofen. Taking a nutritional yeast helped me.
Oh, wow. You benefited from that? Wow.
Yeah.
Was that a B vitamin thing?
I would think so.
I run into so many people who get like the yeast issues from taking nutritional yeast. Like in fact, there's even like some cancer studies about that where I recommend not taking it. But if it helped you, like
it helped.
The B vitamins might have been better than, and you didn't have the autoimmune yeast issues like that.
Yeah, and I suspect it's the B vitamins. You know, all of these things, like you said, when you're doing self-experimentation, there is some risk that, you know, maybe I'm doing some things wrong, you know, but I would try different things. A lot of people have been helped by the ketogenic diet. I recently wrote kind of a floxy food guide where I mention that the ketogenic diet helps your mitochondria. Also mention all sorts of mitochondria improving foods, and you know, people need to get their mineral levels back up. You know, when these drugs suck the magnesium and the iron out of your body, you need to get those things back in. And then I really think that a lot of self-help stuff helped me a lot, and getting my head into a halfway decent place was incredibly helpful.
So Lisa, you're facing an early death, or at least aging at a young age, and I said the same thing. I'm like, when I was 26, 27, I'm like, I feel like an old man. In fact, I work at an anti-aging group and I hang out with old men and we're talking about the same stuff because like I was young when I was old. So yeah, of course getting your head straight, because you're facing death. Like that's what most people do when they're older. You get the wisdom, or when you have something this big happen to you, you've got to face it when you're younger. So I'm happy that you said that. And for people listening, like that's one of the reasons that the personal growth work matters, whatever age you are. because it lets you be resilient around something like this. Because what happened to you kind of sucks, right? But you've handled it.
Yeah, and there was a huge spiritual component to my healing. And forgiving myself for getting sick. And forgiving myself
for
taking those pills. And forgiving myself for not being able to do the things that I used to be able to do. And forgiving myself for being angry. And all of those things were incredibly helpful. And I needed tools in order to find that forgiveness. And meditation was a huge tool. Doing a lot of self-help work through PSI is the company that I used, but I'm sure that all the self-help companies have very similar messages. And
well, there's one guy, Alberto Viotto, mm-hmm. who's a shaman, has been a guest. He runs the Four Winds Academy of like training people in energy medicine. He's been a guest on the show, 20 years in the jungle, taking hallucinogens, like a real shaman, cultural anthropologist. And you know what he talks about the most? Mitochondria.
Interesting.
Which is so bizarre, but he has like whole lectures on mitochondria, and it's actually not that bizarre, because what you felt right there, when your mitochondria go down, like that is the source of your spiritual energy, it's the source of your emotional energy, and the source of your physical energy. You took a hit on all of those levels, right? So if you're going to heal on all of those levels, of course you looked at your spiritual side, you looked at your emotional side, and you looked at your physical side. Like you don't get one without the other in either direction.
Yeah.
So congratulations on figuring that out.
Well, oh, thanks. You know, like it occurred to me at some point during this journey, like my soul is in my bacteria, like maybe, you know, and yeah, like having those vibrations in your mitochondria and your bacteria, like those make a difference in how you, in every aspect of your life, including your spiritual life, and everything works together. Your mental, your emotional, your physical, and your spiritual. And it was a journey through all of those things in order to get healthy again. And, you know, I was lucky. I have largely recovered. I'm not doing CrossFit anytime soon, but like I said, it's not tragic for me to do Pilates instead. Like no one is dying because of that. But there are some people who don't recover, and I do want to be sure to get the word out and not kind of disregard them by saying like, oh, well, you know, I recovered, you'll be okay.
Well, there's some other mitochondrial things that a lot of people just don't know, because we aren't taught to manage our mitochondria the way, or mind your mitochondria the way Terry Walls also did. She faced death, she was in a wheelchair. She's been a guest on the show. She's a personal friend and a physician who like, oh, look, I can use food and supplements and in her case, electricity and get out of a wheelchair and reverse, was it MS, progressive MS, which is also mitochondrial origin kind of disease. So you're like we have all these shiny examples of people who had to do it or die.
Right.
And well, this is where innovation happens. This is where disruption happens. Like this is where progress happens. So even though it sucks, like you're doing that. And when you look at mitochondria, whatever damage caused it, whether it was just aging, whether it was a chemical exposure, an immune thing, whatever, the mitochondria, when they get too overwhelmed, like they die, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, because then you grow new ones, as long as you have the ability to grow new ones. You also, like people know about glutathione, who listen to the show, because I make a glutathione supplement that helps, it's the master antioxidant, helps your liver do its job better, and it helps your cells have more glutathione. But you can train your mitochondria to make more of their own antioxidants. And this is largely missing from the conversations that I hear about this. So they make SOD and they make glutathione. And if you basically train your mitochondria to do more of that, their antioxidant enzyme systems get stronger. And you can tweak on mitochondrial performance with things like there's upgraded aging, the substance that I manufacture, which changes some ratios of NAD to NAD plus, and you can do stuff like that. But if you don't actually stress them, it's not a supplement, but the stress does something similar to what a supplement does. And the number one mitochondrial stressor that works that I'm aware of is ozone therapy. When you do ozone therapy, it puts a heavy load on the mitochondria, almost like lifting weights for the mitochondria antioxidant system. So I would encourage you and all of the people who are Floxies to think about ozone therapy, because what it does is if the mitochondria are really far gone, they're probably going to die. That's fine. But the ones who are there, they're going to be like, oh, I guess I should start working again. Like I have to work again. And it's basically exercise for them in a way that's very different than any other exercise. My brain turned back on when I had really bad toxic mold exposure. I'd lived in multiple moldy houses and I was like, I don't know if I can do this anymore. I did ozone therapy at home every night for 18 months when I was home. I didn't do it when I was traveling. I did it as soon as I came back. And the first night, I'm like, oh, I got my brain back for 5 minutes. Mitochondria in the brain, first place you feel it. The next night, 7 minutes. And I just kept doing it over and over. And one of the reasons I think I'm sitting here today with more capacity now than I had when I was 20 is because I used ozone to tell the mitochondria in my body, you guys better buck up. And just sitting around being damaged, you're either going to die or you're going to get better. You don't have a choice about it. So like for anyone listening, I've had multiple guests like Robert Rowan, who's treated Ebola with ozone, talk about it. But as a mitochondrial stimulant to cause mitogenesis, to cause mitochondrial healing, to cause mitochondrial antioxidants, man, you and your tribe of floxies have to get on the ozone bandwagon.
Several people have been helped immensely by ozone and also by glutathione IVs, by hydrogen peroxide IVs. A lot of people go the IV route. I didn't, in part just because it was too expensive for me. It was awfully expensive to find a functional medicine doctor who could do that. And then each IV was going to be a lot of money. And so,
It's about $100 to $150 per IV if you're going to do it right. It's expensive.
And doing that daily is rough. So, in talking about SOD and glutathione, I just want to real quick mention a study that was done in India of, it was an in vivo study, on human cells, humans who had taken these fluoroquinolones, and the SOD and glutathione levels decreased by 77.6% for those who took Cipro, 50.5% for those who took Levaquin.
Wow. So you definitely want to turn that stuff back on.
Right. You want to turn that stuff back on. But also, all of the people who are taking glutathione supplements or who are eating tons of broccoli because they want to increase their levels of glutathione, don't undo everything that you just did by taking one of these drugs. These drugs just, they suck all of the antioxidants out of your body.
Yeah, you got to make the body make more antioxidants.
Absolutely.
So I think there's hope for people who've been exposed to any strong mitochondrial damaging substance, including the whole family of fluoroquinolones. There, I said it with it rolling off my tongue. It's funny. It's a word you read all the time, but you don't pronounce a lot. Let's see. I'm looking for additional things that I haven't asked you that you would tell people. So you have an audience. There's probably a couple hundred thousand people are going to hear this. So what would you say to people that, don't take antibiotics unnecessarily? I think people have heard that already in the general discourse and certainly from you. But is there a very specific thing that you'd want to share?
I think I want people to understand that there are differences between the different antibiotics. And like I said earlier, these really should be categorized as chemo drugs. They are much more similar to chemo drugs than they are to penicillin. And they do cellular damage, just like chemo drugs do. They could also save lives, just like chemo drugs do. But do not take these drugs if there is a viable alternative. Okay. They really should only be used in life or death situations.
So that's a cool message, and that's a nuance that I don't want people to miss. You're not saying don't take antibiotics ever. You're saying if you're going to do it, take one that causes less harm.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. I'm not anti-antibiotic, right. I don't think that anyone wants us to get to the point of complete antibiotic resistance any sooner than we're going to. But there is a problem of just categorizing these as antibiotics and therefore categorizing them as benign when they're not benign drugs. And they kill bacteria, but there are consequences. There are consequences to doing that, and some of those consequences have a lot to do with chronic illness. And do we really want to trade our acute, sniffles for chronic illness down the road? I don't.
Got it. I don't think anyone does.
And can I just say one more thing? So the 21st Century Cures Act is something that is passing through Congress right now, and it appears to be virtually unopposed, and it's going to pass. There's a provision in it that will allow for experimental antibiotics that have never been proven or proven safe to be given in a hospital environment. I was obliterated by an antibiotic that has a 30-year track record. And lots of other people have been too. I can only imagine what will happen when they just open the doors, when the FDA says, oh, we're just not going to care anymore. As long as you call it an antibiotic, you have free rein to do whatever. I find that to be very scary. And I think that there are... The 21st Century Cures Act will enable the pharmaceutical companies to truly just put out snake oils.
Well, it sounds like they may put out some things that are more dangerous. And that's a double-edged sword. You know, I feel for a doctor who says, I could save this person's life if the regulatory people would get out of the way, and I'm going to watch them die.
Right.
That's a conundrum that I don't know that we're going to solve legally. I'm thinking of a case where Dr. Lana, my wife, and I ran a medical lab testing company. And we were testing people for an autoimmune response or an immune response to metal in the body. And we had an 8-year-old referred patient/client. And he was dying. He'd had a chest expander put in. He had a genetic condition where his ribs were growing inwards. And his physicians put in a titanium implant to hold his ribs apart. And the second it went in, he started dying. And 6-8 weeks later, he was near death. His entire body started rejecting it. And the physician was just beside himself because no one knew that metal could cause an immune reaction. So we used our test and we showed his white blood cells were just going crazy around titanium. The problem was in the US, there was no legal recourse. All of the things that they could buy were illegal. We were able to get a compassionate exemption from the FDA, which took a little while, and we were very fortunate to be able to get it, to import a zirconium one from Europe where they're legal. And it saved the kid's life.
And it's like,
how do we get around that? Like, we want, in a life or death situation, like, I would want people to pump me full of C-Pro and chemo drugs. Actually, probably not chemo drugs, to be honest. But there's got to be a better way. But I would want, like, the full access of every chemical on Earth at my disposal and my team's disposal. And knowing that I might die. Hey, I want it because I'm going to die. But at the same time, I don't want the drug companies being, hey, why don't you experiment on this guy?
Well, and knowing that you might die, like that's in a life or death situation, that's absolutely appropriate.
Yeah.
You know, like I knew a kid in college who was a kid who made a wish for the Make-A-Wish thing. Like so he was dying. Like they were sure that he was dying. He got his wish and then they did some sort of experimental thing and he lived. And he was cured. And everyone knows that's stories where that happens. Except don't give people an experimental drug when they have a urinary tract infection.
Agreed. It's actually a very bulletproof perspective you have there. With me, I'm like, you don't have to eat the perfect foods all the time. You don't have to always be bulletproof. But you should know when you're making a decision to eat something that isn't very bulletproof. And maybe there's a difference between having, you know, like the tofu soy artificial color burger and, you know, eating something that is like a piece of cheese. Like they're both kind of protein. Neither of them is all the way bulletproof. But one of them is more harmful than the other for the vast majority of people. And so just having this idea that says, okay, don't use antibiotics if you can avoid them. If you're going to use them, don't use the ones that are chemo drugs that have these high risks. Use a weaker one. And like you said up front, if you can use the one that'll kill what you've got, it'd be helpful to know what you've got. So
yeah.
It's a very nuanced, like, spectrum approach where you're not asking people to just say no. You're asking them to just do it smart.
Right, exactly. And we live in a world that's gray, and people want black or white. People want to say, like, antibiotics are good or antibiotics are bad, you know, or any sort of... People want to categorize, and the world is just much more nuanced than that. And I certainly wish that I had never taken Cipro.
Of course, I
hope that some people can learn from my personal experience. I hope that, but you know what? Some of the perspective changes that have come about are not altogether bad. And not that I would go through it again, and not that I would wish it on anyone else, but like now I realize that there are those gray areas. I used to think of all antibiotics as just being purely good. I used to think of just kind of the pharmaceutical system as being purely good. And now I see a lot of harm that is being done. And I think that recognizing the harm that is being done and recognizing the effects of these drugs on people's lives is very important. And also recognizing that the legal system is not recognizing it. And, you know, people say, oh, well, can't you just sue? And it's just not that easy. And so there really isn't any sort of, recourse for a lot of people who are going through these things. And it's given me purpose too, which is nice.
It is nice. And it's probably given you some wisdom because, well, you sound like you've certainly learned from this experience. And I want you to share your wisdom by answering the final question in the show, which is, given all the stuff you've been through and just your whole life outside of being a Floxy, if someone came to you tomorrow, whether they've been exposed to drugs or not, and said, look, I want to perform better at everything tomorrow, what are the three most important things I should know? What would you tell them?
First, read the drug warning labels. Read it and know that it could happen to you. Like, uh-huh. Don't think like that. And listen to people's stories too. Like, read the warning labels and listen to people's stories. Can I have that be one?
Sure.
And then question your categories. Like I was saying, these are chemo drugs, not necessarily antibiotics. Think about things differently. Question your categories when it comes to drugs. Like when it comes to, like we were talking about ibuprofen, just because it's over the counter doesn't mean that it's safe. Question those things. And meditate. Like meditation, it helped me to get my head, heart, and soul into a place where I could deal with this. And you know, it's been shown to have all sorts of biochemical benefits that I certainly won't go into because I'm certainly not an Sure. expert on it. But it helped me to find peace, and it encouraged healing.
Excellent. Lisa, thanks for being on the show, and tell people where they can find out more info about your group and about where you share information about Acipro and all of its cousins' bad things.
Right. So my information and my website is on floxyhope.com. That's FLOXIEHOPE.com. And if you click on the contact me link on floxyhope.com, you can reach me. I'm also reachable through Facebook and Twitter as well.
Beautiful. Thanks for sharing your experience on Bulletproof, and have an awesome day.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me, Dave.
If you enjoyed today's episode, you know what to do. Head on over to iTunes and say that you liked it and leave us a good review. And maybe while you're at it, think about what you can do to upgrade your mitochondria, because it's not just people who've been exposed to fluoroquinolones who have mitochondrial issues. It's people who age. And whether you're 6 years old or you're 60 years old, you age. We all do. And by holding the line against mitochondrial decay, you can not stop yourself from being old, which is kind of a nice thing, but you can actually kick more ass today and tomorrow. And fixing my own mitochondria has been a core part of my own program for being a high performance human being. So think about that and do what it takes, whether it's try cryotherapy, use some supplements, do intermittent fasting, high intensity interval training, and almost every other technique that you can read about on Bulletproof is about at some point making your mitochondria do their jobs better. So take that to heart, learn from today's episode, and have an awesome day.
Hey, this is Dave Asprey here at the Bulletproof Coffee Shop in Santa Monica, California. This is where many of the recipes for Bulletproof, the cookbook, were designed. The cookbook is based on the New York Times bestselling book, The Bulletproof Diet. When you eat this way, you have limitless energy, you don't have food cravings, you're not hungry, and you just feel amazing all the time. More willpower, and your pants are going to be looser anyway. When you buy this book, I'm going to give you a big discount on the book, free shipping, and a bunch of bonus content to teach you how to cook this way, so you just have that amazing sense of wellness all the time.
Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.